né? Enfim, this is the caretaker for the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society's official podcast. And you're listening to an excellent, scary, spooky, freaky podcast that's been put together by lovely people who care about people like me, the bony undead. But anyway, I just want to let you know that the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society podcast is available at www.louisvillegs.com or on iTunes. So, haunt your iPod today and get me in there, okay? Possess me by your iPod. Make me feel at home inside your little portable MP3 player. And of course, learn about the paranormal and get freaked out along the way. All right, back in the grave I go. But be sure and download our podcast and subscribe, because I'll miss you and haunt you if you don't.
Be caught bored waiting for something to go bump in the night? Listen to the Paranormal Broadcast System with Brad, Brandon, Todd, and Paul.
Well, hello, Mr. Phantom Man.
Listen to some great interviews with some amazing guests that run the gamut from ghost hunting groups across the country to paranormal personalities in the media. First, let's be serious for a moment. Then let's have some fun! We've got it all covered. Tune in and listen to intriguing interviews with our hosts from L.A. Spirits and the Louisiana Spectral Research Center. Then kick back and listen to us try to be funny with some crazy Cajun. And some other guys, too. This is no kids show, folks. It's the Paranormal Broadcast System. Listen to us poke fun at ourselves. It's funnier that way. You can find us at www.lagghosts.com. That's www.lagghosts.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
What are ghosts? Can anyone become one? How do they interact with time and space? Stripping away the sensationalism and fraud linked to this contentious topic, J. Allen Danilek presents a well-researched study of a phenomenon that has fascinated mankind for centuries. Analyzing theories that support and debunk these supernatural events, Jeff objectively explores hauntings, the ghost psyche, spirit communication, and spirit guides. He also investigates spirit photography, EVP, ghost hunting tools, Ouija boards, and the darker side of the ghost equation, malevolent spirits and demon possession. His website is www.ourcuriousworld.com, which is O-U-R. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys.
That was a very nice job, Bonnie, I have to say.
Thank you.
That was very official. That was very official. Very cool. Well, just that little bio we read there, Jeff, I have to say, that was a mouthful.
Yeah,
that was
it
a
was.
Mouthful. That's a lot of
There's
stuff.
There's a whole lot of ideas there.
There's a whole lot of ideas there. And speaking of ideas, too, Keith, you got a couple questions for me. We'll get to that one. I know you mentioned that when we were on break. Basically, I mean, how'd you get started in this stuff, Jeff? I'm just really curious, the work you've been doing, I'm wondering how you got started in it.
Well, actually, the ghost book came out of an earlier book that I had put out a couple years ago on reincarnation.
Okay.
I had written this whole book on reincarnation, and then I had all these loose ends. What about ghosts? Where do they fit into this whole premise? So I started exploring that subject a little bit more. I've always kind of had an interest in them. And through the course of that, I found I had enough material to put together a whole other book. So it's like one book sort of leads to the next book, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, and that makes sense to me. I know there's a lot of authors out there who have done the same thing where,
mm-hmm.
you know, they put together this body of work, right? They put together this whole body of work for a book, and then they have, you know, other ideas that they really can't put into the framework or the infrastructure of the present work they're working on. So they say, hey, you know what? I can use this as maybe a follow-up or something like that to what I presented here. And it seems like a natural progression to me. The ideas, I mean, all these things that you got into, though, I mean, and one of the words that stick out to me, obviously, is fraud. Because that's a big thing in the stuff we do here. I mean, we're paranormal investigators ourselves, amateur paranormal investigators ourselves, and we've dealt with bushels full of fraud in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what your ideas are on that, maybe some of your insight on that was.
Well, I do think that most ghostly reports and things of that nature that aren't true are not necessarily frauds. I think they're just mistakes. I think a lot of people see spots on film and they think it's an orb, or they are hearing noises in the house and they think it's a ghost. So I don't think most people really set out to try to hoax it. But there are those individuals who, you know, love attention. They want to be in the spotlight or whatever. And I don't know if it's as prevalent as it used to be years ago when you had the phony mediums and the whole horse and pony shows they would put on, that Houdini made a career of going to each one of them, debunking them. And the spirit photography of the 19th century with William Mumler, who produced these double exposures and selling them for exorbitant prices to gullible people, did tremendous damage to the entire field. That's why today you can't get a bona fide scientist usually to take ghosts seriously because of all the damage that's been done in the past.
Mm. And that's that right there. That really, you really hit the nail on the head, I have to say, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there I know that they don't take this very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to sit here and like, oh, you all need to die for doing that. But there,
right.
especially with, I think, with a lot of the media attention, because as of right now, there's like 400 shows on the TV right now about
exactly.
this stuff. There's a different show for every, like, you know, every cable channel you have. They have their own version of a paranormal show.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings a lot of media attention to what we're doing right now, which is a very cool thing. On the opposite end, though, it does bring out, I think, a lot of people who just want to have some fun. You know? Some people, go ahead, Bonnie. What were
you saying? Also where the sensationalism comes in, because everyone thinks that, oh, I'm going to go out ghost hunting and these ghosts are going to come up from the ground when I'm in the cemetery and they're going to attack me, and don't go based on what movies show
no,
you.
No.
And
listen to Ghostly Talk.
Not every ghost hunt happens like it does on TV.
No, I don't.
things do not happen every time.
The MTV age mentality.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, and that's really what it is. That's the idea that, you know, and like you just said, Bonnie, it don't usually go that way.
No, it doesn't.
At the same time, there's a lot of people that go out and I mean, we've talked to plenty of people on this show, Jeff, I have to say, other people that have said, okay, this is what we did. We went to this place, we did this, we found out that they literally set up, like, stuff in the walls and
mm-hmm.
things like that. That's one example.
Yep.
To make sounds.
I remember
that. And how do you approach that when you're coming there to try to do some work in our field? I've never been faced with something that blatant before.
Right.
But I don't know how I would not contain my anger at someone. I mean, you wasted my time, you wasted my money, you wasted my resources to do this thing. You know, what's the deal with that? And that does, in the grand scale of things, it basically crushes, I mean, like you just said, you can't get a legitimate scientist to take this stuff seriously based on that fact alone right there, I think. That's the biggest problem I think we're going to have, especially now down the road. That's a great point, Jeff. You're right. You're completely right about that.
Well, I think there's a wide range of paranormal investigators out there. I think you've got people who are hobbyists, who believe everything's a ghost. But then you do have the serious ones. And for the serious ones, they don't usually get taken in very easily.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty hard to fool a serious ghost hunter. You know, I guess it could happen. Now, I've been on a couple of ghost hunts with a local group here in Denver, Rocky Mountain Paranormal, and they're kind of a debunking group, kind of like Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they go to places that they have checked out beforehand. It's usually public buildings. They'll do private homes, but usually it's public places they look at, and so it's a little bit more difficult. They don't advertise that they're going to be at this ghost hunt, so that people don't know to set up these things.
Yeah, yeah.
They just kind of show up when they get an opportunity. So there's things you can do to defend yourself. Like I said, most of the time in a ghost hunt, not much is going to happen for hours and hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while you'll get a couple of things going on that are interesting, you want to kind of check them out. But I found it's equivalent to being in combat, where you know it's 99% boredom broken by 1% sheer terror.
Well,
yeah.
What an analogy.
That's absolutely perfect.
Jeff, I think it's official. You got line of the night for the show.
I love it.
That's the truth, though. That's the truth. I mean, yeah, a lot of it is. I can't count how many times we said it on this show. Probably every show we said, look, man, look, when you're doing this thing, here's the truth of it. You're going to do a lot of sitting. You're going to do, if you're a smoker, you're going to do a lot of smoking.
Right.
Because you're going to be sitting there, for lack of a better term, you're going to be bored sometimes. You're going to get bored of doing it. Well, just sitting there at least.
I'm not a paranormal investigator myself. I'm a researcher, and what I do is I follow these people around. So
uh-huh.
I'm not really ghost hunting. I'm interviewing, I'm following them around, watching what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, I'll take an EM meter and go and play with it and stuff. But I'm not really ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of outside of that, you know, the hours and hours of sitting. But I know what they go through because I talk to these people and I admire them. I couldn't do that. I would much rather go to the computer and write a book than sit all day looking for a ghost.
Well, you mentioned the different types of ghost hunters, and that's kind of an interesting idea because, yeah, you're right. There are the people that are more or less hobbyists that just kind of do this for something to kill time when they're not at work or whatever. And then there's people that take themselves very, very, very seriously. I want to interject a third type of ghost hunter though, because I think there is. Based on the things that you kind of laid down, the parameters, I think kind of what we do here, it's more of a hybrid kind of thing. We do take our, you know, and this is something I learned a long time ago from some reputable people. They said, look, take your work seriously. Take
mm-hmm.
the work you're doing seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously.
Exactly.
You know? So, we like to have a good time. We like to have fun. This is, we take the hobby very seriously, I think.
Absolutely.
So it still mm-hmm. is, we say it all the time, Jeff, that it's a hobby to us. But at the same time, once it's crunch time, let's try to collect the evidence and present it in the best way possible. That is kind of like a third. I think that's a third type of ghost hunter to add to your arsenal. I think
right.
to talk to people about. That's kind of how we approach it. I think that's kind of our idea, Jeff. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, that makes sense. But I also noticed that among serious ghost hunters, there's two different approaches. There's the scientific approach, and then there's the more spiritual or medium approach.
Yeah.
And there's some ghost groups out there that they're really into casting out ghosts, and they use mediums, and they find stuff all over the house. Then you've got the science groups that come in with the instrumentation and stuff and the cameras and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two broader groups I've noticed. And both groups kind of consider the other one, you know, out of the loop.
Really?
Yeah. The ones that are very much using mediums and psychics are kind of poo-pooed by the science guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they are the ones who, you know, don't have much use for the science guys because they think this is all a spiritual issue.
Right.
Well, they're at odds themselves.
Yeah, and that's a rough thing, I think, because it seems like it would make sense to me, because I've done this personally before. It seems like those two groups would embrace each other because, okay, look, here's the psychic standing here, right? The psychic gets some impression that there's something in the room, and here's the scientist with his little tri-field meter and his little recorder in his hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
The psychic gets the impression, and then the scientific ghost hunter on this side says, oh, wow, I got a spike in the tri-field. Oh, let me roll back the recording and see if I got any voices or something like that. It seems like they would be able to they'd be able to verify their information from the psychic standpoint.
There are some groups that meld both the scientific and the psychic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are those groups out there, like you said, Jeff, that they butt heads.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm talking to people paranormal, they're very scientific based, and it drives them up the wall that these guys come in. And they say, oh, you got a ghost in this room, you got a ghost in that room. There's one upstairs in the attic. That one's named Bob. This one's named Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're confusing people. These homeowners like believe this. They don't know what to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just frightens them. So they try to come in with a scientific approach. And if they don't find anything, they say, look, we didn't find anything. We don't know if you have a ghost. You probably don't. You may, you know, but we didn't find anything.
Well, yeah. And
those other groups will come in and say, yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So that's kind of...
And that's totally confusing. You're right. That's totally
detrimental,
confusing.
You know, to what you're trying to do. You're cross purposes.
Totally confusing.
But Rocky Mountain does use a couple mediums in theirs, too, and I got to interview them. But they use them as a kind of a standby or a backup thing rather than as their primary means of looking for these things.
Well, I know Ghostly Talk. I know for a fact that we can, you know, we're not really a ghost hunting group, but we're a group of people that do this radio show, and then we go out and we go out and do some work ourselves. And I know we've always kind of leaned more towards the scientific ends of things,
mm-hmm.
because I know for a fact that I'm not a psychic. I don't think Bonnie is, and I'm very sure Doug, our absent co-host tonight, is not a psychic either. So what else do we have to work with? Well, let's buy some equipment.
Right.
Let's go out there. Let's buy some shiny stuff and bring it into a room and turn it on and see what it does. Right? That's kind of how we approach it. That's all we can do.
You sound dangerous.
No.
Yeah, we're hard.
We're not bringing machetes in there or anything like that. We're bringing, you know.
But the idea of just enough knowledge to be dangerous. You ever heard that?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go. You're totally right. But, yeah, there is those two sides of it, though. You're completely right, Jeff. I've seen a lot. I like to see a lot more in the future, a lot more of them not butting heads, at least. I like to see them work together more. That's my idea.
And I do think that even the scientific groups are at least open to mediums.
Yeah.
I've never met one yet that said, oh, there's no such thing as a medium. You know, they always are open to it, but they recognize that it is so prone towards not fraud so much as it is assumption or people who believe they're psychics.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and they just go overboard with it. And so that's why they're a little leery of these people. But if they can find a medium that they really trust, they'll use them.
Well, it begs to be said, and you mentioned this earlier, Jeff, that there are people. I'm not going to say there may be groups too, but there are people. This isn't the experience I've had in the past. That, yeah, they need attention.
Mm.
They need to be the center of attention. They need to be in the spotlight. And along comes the paranormal, and they go, "Hey, here's a way for me." I'm being honest. I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings. You know, I'm not trying to offend any psychics out there. Because I've met more wonderful ones, much more wonderful ones that I really have connected with, I think, than ones that I thought were complete frauds. But there are a certain few that literally go out there, and I've been like, okay, look, okay, you need help. Okay? you need help, period. There's nothing going on here. From what I can see, I mean, I have feelings too. I can sense things. I have sensed things in the past. And when someone's sitting there in front of me, like literally like passing out and drooling on themselves and doing all this melodramatic stuff, I'm like, okay, look, you know, wait a minute. Let's kick back here for a minute and try to analyze this a little bit more. There is that small fraction, Jeff. I think you're completely right about that. They'll always be
those
there.
Those people
too.
Usually end up in broadcasting, by the way.
Oh, great. Great. Wonderful. That's all I need. That is all I need.
I'm sorry. I just came down.
What was that? Hang on for one second. What was this? What's going on?
Usually we hear the noise when he...
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Okay. For the listening... Yeah, we're getting a little bit of noise on the line, Jeff. Don't worry about it. Yeah, for the listening audience, deal with it. That's all I can tell you right now. No big deal. Exactly. That's totally cool. No, that is the... There are... Yeah, that's that idea. Like I said, I mean, there are some people out there to do that. And now, broadcasting. That's great. It's all I need right now.
Right.
Well, I never claimed to be a psychic, though. Either of you, Bonnie.
Nope.
I know
I'm
you
about
have
as psychic as a bowling ball.
Yeah, there you go. So I think we're okay, Jeff. You think we're going to be okay on this?
Let's hope so. I have my fingers crossed. Yeah, you guys sound like you're fairly stable.
Well, there. Thank you.
Fairly.
Thank
wow.
you. Appreciate that. That's the best compliment I've had all
so
week.
Far.
That's the best compliment I've had all week, as a matter of fact, I think. there's been a few situations. We've talked about it here on the show. There's been a few situations where we have felt something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have gotten an impression. We have. And those are the ones I think the validity of those things, if I can say that, validity of those things is even more. You know, Doug and I have been doing a lot of interviews on other radio shows like the last month and a half, 2 months. And one of the main questions we're asked is, so have you ever seen a ghost? Well, that's a pretty obvious one. And it's a great question, too.
Right.
And Doug always relates his story that he's told on the show here a few mm-hmm. times about him seeing one and nearly killing me in his
right.
car, right? to this day, I will never doubt Doug's, I'll never doubt Doug on that at all. Because he don't ever say stuff like that. Doug never talks about things like that.
Right.
He don't get an impression that he rarely gets anything. He just goes out there and shoots his film and that's it. And something like that, when you have someone come along and say something like that, like, dude, I saw something, and he swears to it to this day,
right?
I'm going to really believe a story like that. And
absolutely.
I was there, too, on top of that. I experienced part of it, I guess, nearly got killed.
As far as being psychic, though, I think anybody who's in the presence of a spirit, if it's, you know, manifesting itself, it's pulling energy out of the air around it,
mm-hmm.
it's really getting close, I think almost anybody, even a bowling ball, is going to pick that up. You know, so you don't have to be a psychic to sense a ghost.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I do think that there are some people that are a little bit more sensitive to these energies than others.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there are people who have a better, you know, who are better at singing. You know, they have a good tone,
mm-hmm.
whereas other people don't. They're tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they can't sing. They just have to work a little harder to sing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what most psychics a lot... It's about all the psychics I've talked to have said the same thing. Like, look, this is something that everybody can do, actually.
Right.
It's something that, you know, some people are better at than others. Some people have their naturals, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that excel in that. That's fine. But everybody can do it. It's just
right.
You may have to work harder than the other person does to do that. So, hey, you know, I mean, I've tried. I'm terrible at it. I've tried to, like, focus myself, but my mind likes to go in, like, a million different directions, like,
right.
every second of the day. So I can't focus myself enough to really, like, hone in on something, I guess, if you want to call it that.
But that begs the question that, just like a singer training to become better at singing, can you train yourself to be more sensitive?
You know, I think so. I think you can learn how to focus on that energy and kind of concentrate on it. And clear your mind after a while. And I think it's also one of those things that as you experience it repeatedly, you begin to know what to look for. And your
mm-hmm.
body begins to pick up on what it is that these things are, where at first you just are guessing.
Mm-hmm.
True,
yeah.
True.
So I think in a way you can't, I don't think you can ever become, you know, train yourself to be a full-blown psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's almost, maybe there's even a genetic component to that.
Maybe,
but I do
yeah.
think you
yeah.
can get to the point where you can sense things around you.
There was one time, I'll relay this story to you, Jeff. About 3 years ago, I really got into, like, trying to meditate and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. I mean, seriously, I was, like, spending every night at home after work, like, just drooling on myself on my bed. Just, like, just sitting there trying to do stuff, right? And one night, I think I did something. I don't know what I did. I can't explain it. But I got myself so deep into whatever it was I was just trying to just, like, kept my eyes closed and focused on just my mind's eye, I guess you'd say,
mm-hmm.
just focused on that. And what I saw actually were kind of like, and this is, I'm trying to describe it, but what it was like these jagged kind of figures, human-like figures, but jagged-like figures. And one of them was saying to me, 4 days, 4 days, 4 days. That's all it kept saying to me was 4 days. And it was Monday, so I'm like, okay, well, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that's Friday. Okay, something's going to happen to me on Friday, right? Something something huge.
Or Thursday, maybe.
Or Thursday, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, depending on how you count it, right? Depending on how you count it, right? Okay, so but my assumption was Friday. So all week long, I'm like, okay, all right, something happened. I'm going to win the lottery. Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be great. Oh, Friday's going to be the day. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. And Friday came and went. Just a regular day at work, regular day at home. Nothing really happened. So I don't know. Maybe I saw something. Maybe I saw something. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe if I kind of like worked with it some more, I could have maybe gotten more out of it. But I think I had to take care of something else. I had to pay bills or something. So I didn't.
Unless it was trying to tell you 4 more days until the next weekend.
Maybe it was. Maybe I didn't look into it.
Friday is what it was telling you.
Yeah, maybe I didn't look into it enough. I don't know.
Or maybe you were so focused on trying to find something big that was going to happen to you that you missed something small that did happen.
Self-immolation. Exactly. I love it.
Exactly,
That's probably what happened. So, I mean, yeah, the idea, like you said, again, is, you know, I've always heard that everyone's psychic. It's just a matter. Some people are better at it than others.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Bonnie, it's all you. I'm burned.
Oh, it's all me.
Bonnie, it's you. Go for it.
All right, show's over.
Ah!
I'm kidding, I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
You said you have went on some paranormal investigations in the past, Jeff?
Yeah, I've gone on a couple of ghost hunts here locally in Denver area just to see what they do so I could write about it intelligently rather than just guessing.
Yeah. Well, you go and, I mean, and also, I mean, I'm just looking at just some notes we had here, you know, and for example, this is the only question I'm going to ask you, okay? I won't ask you any more questions. But one of the things is, what is the strongest piece of evidence that you found that denies the existence of ghosts? And I'm really curious to hear about your take on this, Jeff. Would you want to talk about that a little bit?
The strongest piece of evidence that denies the evidence?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I suppose it would be the fact that finding ghosts is so difficult. I mean, it's not repeatable like the scientific method would have you believe. You know, you can't really prove a ghost because they don't act on cue. They don't show up when they're supposed to. You can't predict one. You can't tell what they're going to do. So it's very easy to discount the whole idea of ghosts based upon the fact that so much of the evidence is anecdotal and so much of the hard evidence is still very debatable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a spike on an EM meter doesn't mean it's a ghost. It means there's a spike in the EM meter.
Well, there could be a million other things that are making that EM meter spike,
Absolutely.
Too.
Right.
So it is.
It's very difficult. The standards of proof are very high for the paranormal. It's much higher than it is for any other science.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it should be, you know, because this is an important issue. If you could prove the existence of ghosts, then you have demonstrated the afterlife, and that's going to change really a lot of people's perceptions. It would affect religious beliefs in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty major thing to try to demonstrate.
Well,
so the burden of proof should be pretty high.
Well, of course. I mean, if you were able to prove that, hypothetically, if you were able to prove that there is an afterlife or that ghosts exist, it is going to. I agree with you on that 100%, that it's going to change the world.
Yeah, as he just said, it would completely change the whole religious paradigm.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, and science, too, because now what science going to want to do? Oh, they're going to want to try to contact the other side. So they're going to start coming up with gizmos and trying to do this. And then you can get into legal questions, like, can you use the testimony of a ghost in a murder trial?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that valid? You know, if you can demonstrate there is such a thing as a ghost, then why couldn't you use their testimony to put this guy away?
That's interesting.
It's very interesting.
Well, what if you want to buy a house? Does the previous dead owner have a say in that?
Ooh.
Hey, money talks, man. I don't think so.
You know, what if the ghost doesn't want you to sell that guy? You know, you have to take that into account. Yeah.
There's a million ways you could take that.
Well, yeah, totally. I don't know.
There's a lot of the problems there. So.
I think I would have a strong argument on that. If the previous owner of a house with a ghost or whatever said that to me, I'd be like, look, I have the money, you don't. Bye. That's all I'd say. Jeff, let's take a quick break, though, all right? We're going to go to break here for a second. Just hang tight. We're going to talk some more with Jeff Allen Danilek about ghosts. We're talking about his book and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of strange ideas there. Talking about previous owners of houses. I don't know. That's an interesting idea, though. It has me thinking right now. We're gonna have to run on that, Bonnie, because I'm thinking about buying a new house pretty soon.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, that's like my new thing I'm gonna be doing. I'm on this new kick. I'm gonna buy a house.
What if the guy in your closet doesn't want you to sell this place?
Deal with it. He's going to have to do it.
He'll haunt you.
Well, yeah, Jeff, apparently I have a ghost in my closet, in my bedroom. that watches me ever so sentimentally while I sleep at night or something like that. I don't know what the deal is.
Creepy. Go to break.
It is very creepy. We'll be right back after this.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.
This is Rick Hayes, Paranormal Communication Consultant of Life's Gift. Feel free to contact me at lifesgift.com for more info about your life after, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Angelic face, don't stop me. darkness as they catch trails of light, throwing silken sacks, and who will see them in their flight?
Hi, I'm Terry at www.missourighost.net. You are listening to Ghostly Talk.
Not exactly.
Just a little different, that's all.
For the next 2 weeks, Doug will not be here. Doug is traveling the country as we speak.
And I'm jealous.
I'm jealous of him, too. I need a vacation.
I wish I was there.
Hey, by the way, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm Keith.
I'm Keith.
Hi,
I'm Keith.
We were talking on break a little bit. Well, first of all, one thing I want to mention, too, is that you just listen to Hollow, actually, the band that we play on the break. All the bands we always play here are all independent bands. They all submit their music free and willingly to let us play it on here. We always like to thank all the bands out there for helping us out do this show, and we hope we're helping you guys out in return, too. So thank you, guys. And that was Hollow, one of the first bands that actually submitted something to us back in the day when we first started doing this independent music thing we do now.
Wow.
Yeah, and they got some new stuff out. They sent it over to me and said, check it out. I'm like, this is great. I'm going to put it down for sure. So thanks, guys. We really appreciate that also. We were talking on break a little bit before we came back here about horror films for some reason. I started with Keith's Cannibal Story. I wasn't here for that one. But we got into these goofy horror films. And Jeff actually asked a pretty good question because he's like, you know, what's the scary? Well, I'm gonna ask you first, Jeff. Like, if you have one, what's the scariest film that you've ever seen?
Well, in terms of ghosts, I don't know if I'd say any of them ever scared me, but I would say as far as well done, really, I think The Sixth Sense and The Others, I think, are both excellent movies. They do capture some elements of the paranormal, I think, that very accurately.
Oh, okay.
I forgot about that. I love The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that once, and it was cool. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. It was a nice film, but it didn't really scare me too much.
Well, no.
Not scary, but, you know, it made you think.
Mm-hmm.
It made you think. That's what I think the big thing was there for that. What about you, Bonnie?
Oh, geez. Well, now he's got me thinking about The Sixth Sense, and I love that movie, but we discussed it, The Exorcist 3. I love that movie.
Isn't it a good film?
Yes.
It's so underrated. Such an underrated film. What about you, Keith?
As I said again, The Exorcist.
The original Exorcist.
And you, Scott?
Me? Well, along the lines of ghosts, it plays along the line of ghosts and things like that, because there's experiences that people have throughout the film that are very trait characteristic of it gets cold in a room. They feel things, you know, go through their body and stuff like that. But Prince of Darkness.
I've never seen it.
John Carpenter. It's a brilliant film, and it also has Alice Cooper too. That makes it even cooler.
Do you have it?
I don't own it. It's one of the films that I have to pick up still. I'm just too lazy to go on Amazon or something like that and order it, because you can't really go to the local stores and pick it up. It's not out of print, but it's not widely available. But for people out there, we got on this little film thing, and Prince of Darkness. That's my pick.
Nathan says your pick is Ghost.
What? Oh, my pick is Ghost. Patrick Swayze, Ghost.
Yeah. Demi Moore, Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah.
I just actually bought The Seventh Seal with Demi Moore.
That's a good flick.
That's a really good flick. I mean, if you want to talk about like apocalyptic stuff, that's like a really cool film.
Mm-hmm.
Prince of Darkness, though, as far as horror, ghost horror films, things like that, I'm all about Prince of Darkness. All right, so that's our movie picks for the week here.
Okay. Everyone go out and get them now.
Go out and buy those.
If you don't like them, email Scott L. at ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take the heat for that one. Thank you. It was Jeff's idea. Jeff asked us. Jeff asked us.
Well, now I have a question for him.
Okay. All right. I'm shutting up.
It says here on the little sheet that I can ask it, so I'm going to ask it.
Oh, boy.
No, I just
I'm sorry
want to
in
know
advance.
What his thoughts are on shows like Medium and Ghost Whisperer.
Oh, okay.
And whether they're helping or hurting the paranormal field.
Well, actually, I think that the fictionalized ghost shows like that are, well, I guess to make it entertaining, they have to be exaggerations. No one's going to have those many paranormal experiences that short of order, or, you know, that vibrant. In real life, it's much more hit and miss. But, of course, they have to fit all this into a one-hour episode, and so everything happens, you know, like it's supposed to.
Right.
Whether it's hurting or helping, I don't think it hurts, really. I think it's more of a reflection of where we are as a society. We're starting to show interest in this stuff, so therefore our entertainment is starting to reflect that.
Yeah. I've always thought, and I've been saying this for a while, too, to people, is I think that maybe – I don't think it's this dramatic, but I do think society in general – I mean, globally too, that we are maybe sitting on the edge of a spiritual enlightenment. Not too terribly dramatic, like we're like
right.
The whole world's going to change and we're going to plant flowers everywhere we go and stuff like that. But you know, we are kind of on the edge where people are starting to think a lot further than just like, you know, get up, go to work, do that kind of stuff.
Right.
Gotta do laundry, gotta do dishes. People are kind of thinking a little bit more outside of that, and that's a great way to put it too, Jeff. Where you know, that's our entertainment's reflecting that now.
Well, not only that, but I think the field of quantum physics has really opened up this area to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't be interested in it, because you can find some parallels between the paranormal and quantum physics.
Okay.
In terms of the interdimensional things happening and the sort of illusory nature of everything and how everything's made out of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find those kind of scientific, you know, solid scientific ideas behind ghosts, there are people who are willing to listen to it.
Well, yeah.
Because it's not just a story now. Now it has some kind of basis to it.
Well, yeah, and I think if people can kind of, because quantum physics, obviously, that isn't everybody's cup of tea. I don't think people can sit there and go through all the, you know, all the science behind quantum physics. But I think, you know, through the entertainment, like we're talking about, through the shows and stuff like that, if you can kind of give them a story and then and kind of go into the story and try to analyze it through equipment, maybe through psychics or whatever it may be, it makes it a little bit easier of a pill to swallow and make people understand it a little bit easier, too. So that may be the way it's going with that kind of stuff as far as quantum
sure.
physics goes.
And that's what my book is trying to do. It's trying to give people sort of an objective reason to believe in ghosts. It sets it up. As this is what it could be, you know, this is how things work, and maybe this is what you're actually seeing here.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I talk a little bit about people who are using hallucinogenics or psychotic and stuff. Are they actually imagining these things that they're seeing, or are they actually just able to tap into a realm that's already there that they just can't understand and it frightens them?
Well, and I've had discussions with people, with sensitives in the past that have said, you know, they weren't born this way. They're like, look, I had this happen to me like when I was like 22 years old. One night, it just the floodgates opened up, and I didn't know how to handle it. It almost drove me crazy. It
mm-hmm.
almost drove me nuts. But I was able to level myself out, and now I control it. Now I'm able to. Mm-hmm. Now I'm able to live. I've incorporated it into my life. So that does beg a question like that, Jeff. Where, you know, are these people legit? Do they legitimately have chemical problems with their brain, or are they tapped into something that the rest of us aren't, and we can't understand that, and neither can they? That's how they act. That's why they act the way they do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my book, I make the premise that the brain is not a transmitter of consciousness; it's a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
consciousness exists outside of us, and we're picking it up and, you know, and using that consciousness in our brain. So if you start messing with certain drugs or things like that, you have a chemical imbalance, you're messing with the tuner. And then all of a sudden you start, you know, like you play with a radio dial, and
mm-hmm.
you haven't quite got it on one station, you start to pick up other stations,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of what I think you're doing with these things. You're sort of tuning into areas you're not really designed to tune into. And you're starting to see these other things that exist maybe in other dimensions. And you just can't handle it because what is this? You know, especially if you're young and you don't have a lot of life experience or an expectation of seeing these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's really scary.
Well, yeah, and that would be a very difficult thing to deal with. I always use the example, like if you were blind your whole life,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden somebody turned the lights on for you. I've heard theories that if that happened to someone, if you went from being completely blind to being you know, having full vision, 20/20 vision, that you would literally have a heart attack. It would shut you down, I think, because there's so many things. Just, I mean, sitting in front of me is gazillions of, like, pictures, colors, shapes, sizes of shapes, whatever it may be. There's in front of this table we're in front of right now. There is so much stuff that can go that our receiver can take in, like you say, Jeff. That the receiver, if the receiver has not been working for X amount of years, and then all of a sudden you just throw it on, you're gonna overheat it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why newborns are born blind, basically, and they start to first they see lights and shadows, and then they start seeing things, but they're out of focus, and then over a period of time, as an infant develops, its vision comes into because it couldn't handle all at once. If it could see right out of the womb, it would be overwhelmed.
And I didn't
give it a few weeks.
I didn't know that either. I knew babies couldn't see that well. I mean, I knew that, but I didn't know that. Did you say they're more or less blind when they?
But all they can see is light and shadow. They mm-hmm. can't see distinct images. Mm-hmm. You know, they do more of their they sense things more than they actually see them. They can sense someone holding them, someone talking to them. Those kinds of that's where they get most of their information from. The mm-hmm. vision comes later. As they're able to handle it.
Yeah, well, and that's the exact same scenario, though, too, Jeff. I mean, if a baby, you're in the womb, you don't see anything, really, except for me. What do you see in the womb?
Amniotic fluid.
Okay, you see amniotic fluid. That's not very exciting.
No,
it's not much. That's not very, that's not really interesting. And then all of a sudden, you're here, you're delivered. And if you were to have perfect vision then, how would you handle that? Especially a little baby? That has no idea about anything.
Yep.
That doesn't know how to deal with any type of input they're getting. I mean, yeah, that would be overwhelming. I think, and that's a perfect correlation. You're totally right on that, Jeff.
And that's why we go through that birth process, so we have time to acclimate ourselves from the spiritual realm back into the physical realm, because we're going from a world of timelessness where there's no space or time, and you're going into a world of physicality. You need that time to sort of transition. Which is what we do through the birth process. Just the same way when we die, we also have a transitional period of time, which is where ghosts come from. They're stuck in that transition zone.
Why are they stuck in it? Why do you think they're stuck in that transition zone?
There's something that either they're afraid to move on. They're maybe they grew up believing in hell or something. They're afraid they're going to be judged, so they don't want to move. Maybe they're very possessive. They want to stay in their house. They're frightened. They're confused. Sometimes they stand voluntarily, though. They might want to give a message to somebody. They might want to, maybe they're just mischievous. Maybe they like to play around on the other side. Mm-hmm. But ghosts, I think, are personalities that are trapped in that transitional period, that space. And that's where they live, more or less, kind of with one foot in both realms.
Now, and I've heard that that's pretty much kind of mirrors what I, when people ask me that same question, I explain to them the same thing. Like, look, they have reasons that they don't want to move to that next phase. They may be stuck to living. Some people, I think, there's some people that they may not express it or show it to you in life, but they're so obsessed or they so much love to live that they don't want to move on. They want to still be here. They don't want to go to the next realm, so to say. They love life, right? Mm. Which is a beautiful thing, right? But once the shell is dead, once you're done, I mean, you got to go somewhere. So that's kind of how they get stuck there too. They're stuck in that area.
Yeah, I think if you haven't dealt with your fear of death, you're not really going to be able to make that transition very easily. People who have looked at the issue of the afterlife and have made some decisions about it, they usually don't become ghosts. They can move through it very easily. It's just people that really are frightened of the whole concept of death. They want nothing to do with it. They want to avoid it with their every fiber. They're the ones who end up getting stuck there.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm kind of like, I'm trying to take it all in myself. My receiver is not working that well, Jeff.
Along the lines of the receiver comment, though, you mentioned people messing with hallucinogenic drugs and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't the same thing be said with people that have had severe closed head injuries?
Jeff?
Oh, yeah, I think anything that damages the receiver or affects it in some way is going to affect how it's tuning.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that there are people who they can get a trauma of some kind and all of a sudden they become a sensitive because now all of a sudden they're tuned a little bit differently and now they can pick up these things that were always there before but they never could see.
Mm-hmm. And there are stories of that, too. There are stories of people having injuries of that sort. and coming out going, okay, I'm seeing stuff that
right.
don't make any sense to me now, you know. And I know typically the medical industry will go, okay, that's just an effect of the closed head injury.
It'll go away.
We'll give you medication for that. Mm-hmm. We'll give you drugs for that, and we'll turn you into a zombie, and then you won't experience anything anymore. You won't experience life at all.
Right.
Well, you know what the brain really does? It actually filters. It gets so much sensory input that it actually is minimizing what it's taking in and defining it into smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do with medicines, you can actually diminish the ability to, you know, you can actually increase this ability to filter so that you don't see these things anymore. In other words, you're actually dulling your senses enough that no longer are you able to sense these beings. That's what the medication is doing.
Do you, you know, I hate to do this, but you're talking about this filtering aspect of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we've talked about a lot on the show here, Jeff, is, you know, going back to babies. When you're a baby, you know, you're a clean slate.
Mm-hmm.
That mind is a clean slate to be written on, and through the parenting process, through the growth process, and through their own, you know, through a child's own experiences growing up. I've always, you know, people have always told me, and it's something I agree with, that as you get older, the idea of the paranormal, the experiences you can have in the paranormal, they become more and more filtered over time. So that's why I've always seen the children seem to be a lot of children seem to be more sensitive to these things than adults are. Have you ever explored that idea?
Well, if you notice, people who are in hospices and they're approaching death,
mm-hmm.
they start seeing things. They start seeing loved ones. They start having these experiences. And I do think that young children, because they have just been in the spiritual realm recently,
mm-hmm.
they still retain some of those memories.
Mm-hmm.
And just as people who are dying, who are moving towards the spiritual realm, start picking up on these energies.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that it's actually a circle. We go in and out of the physical and spiritual realms over and over again. And then when you come into it as a newborn, as a new personality, it is shaped to some degree by previous incarnations. So when you come back into this incarnation, there is a template that your soul is using to create that personality. Now it's going to be shaped by events and things that happen afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But like I noticed, I have two sons, both born same hospital room, grew up in the same house, same neighbors, same schools. Everything was the same, but they're very different kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, and to me that tells me that these kids, that they have these experiences from previous lives that are coming into this life, and that's why they're so different.
So the soul is really a vessel, which mm-hmm. that's a good term, a vessel, that, you know, then that's based on the idea of reincarnation,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Right.
It keeps coming back and back, and more or less building a body of experiences and knowledge every time they go through the process of living.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the grand purpose of that is. I've always kind of thought, like, okay, you keep coming back till you get it right.
Right.
That's what I've always kind of believed. Like, you screw it up again. Get back in the field, son. You know, play the game again, right? And then when you finally pull it all together and you make the whole thing happen, then maybe you get to move on. Maybe you get to move on to the next realm. And there's all types of theories on that too.
Right.
You can go for days on that also. I mean, that's kind of how I thought about it. I mean, that's the big picture, I think, though, Jeff.
Well, let me give you a different alternative to think about.
Okay.
What if we're not here to learn or any of those kinds of things, but we're here to simply experience what it is to exist?
Okay.
In other words, imagine that God lives in a spiritual realm in which he can conceive of everything but can't experience anything because of the nature of the spiritual realm. The only way that God can experience himself or herself or itself is to kind of individualize into individual souls and then move through existence. Through physical world. And that's how God basically is experiencing itself through us and as us.
Oh, so we're a bunch of little guinea pigs. I see how it is.
No, we're actually a little cells in God's body.
Well, yeah.
You want to think of it that way.
And
And each cell is having its own individual experience that are all going into the central computer, if you will, and taking all these different experiences in and just simply existing in that context.
Speaking of drugs,
it's an interesting way to look at it.
This is very interesting. But yeah, it's out there though.
I never would have thought of it that way, but
Yeah, I've always thought, like, hey, you keep screwing it up till you get it right.
I'll probably think about it that way now.
Well, screwing up may be a part of the growth process.
Yeah, I mean...
messing up is a part of the growth
process. I mean, yeah, that's complete. I mean, you know...
You gotta learn somehow.
Making mistakes,
if you did everything perfect, you'd have no reason to come back again, would you?
It'd be pretty boring, too, wouldn't you think? If you did everything...
Yeah.
There was an episode, actually, of Alfred Hitchcock that I saw a long time ago, that this man died, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he woke up, and he was in this place... a beautiful, beautiful hotel room with a view of a beautiful ocean and everything, anything he wanted. He had everything he wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had all the women he wanted. He was kind of a bad guy in life. He was a criminal, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had everything he wanted. He did everything. He had a ball. He would always win at cards. He'd always win at everything, right? And they show a scene where he's like, man, I'm perfect. I can't do anything wrong, right? I can't
mm-hmm.
do anything. And then all of a sudden, like, behind him appears a pool table, and he's like, yeah, there's something I can do. I can screw up at, right? And I can play the game and have fun with it, right? Because really, when in that context, you know, okay, let's screw up a little while. That makes the game more challenging, right?
Right.
He goes and hits the pool, the cue ball, and hits all the balls, and they all go in the pockets. Right? So now the guy's freaking out. He's like, oh, my God. This goes on for like a half an hour like this. The guy's told, he's like, oh, my God. And the guy has a host the whole time through this episode. He's like, this is where you'll live. It's kind of like his butler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to the guy. He's like, hey, man, I can't stand being perfect. This is what heaven's supposed to be. And he's like, who told you you were in heaven? Right?
It's the best from Cabot. Yeah, I remember that episode.
That's a great It's a great episode, but it kind of, you know. I mean, boredom may be hell itself, because boredom really does suck.
Yeah,
boredom is, God, is boredom. Oh, it's terrible, right? But, yeah, if we were perfect, though, right, Jeff? I mean, what would be life? There would be no expectations. There would be no forecasting. There would be no planning. There would be nothing going on whatsoever.
No challenges to overcome, basically, you know. No goals to achieve.
Yeah, there would be no goals. There would be no gratification of a hard day's work, right? There would be nothing. You'd just be here. Doing everything perfectly over and over again.
Right.
That would suck.
How boring would that be? I think that's a great way to end the show, too. Unfortunately, we are out of time, though, Jeff. I'm really sorry, man. We're out of time. But that's an interesting thought to leave people with.
Before that, though, I want him to tell everyone where they can buy his book.
Oh, great idea. Bonnie, Bonnie, you tell him. I don't know what I'm doing.
Jeff, where can everyone go to buy your book?
Well, they're in Barnes & Noble and all the good bookstores. If you go to a bookstore, it's not there, leave, because that's a bad bookstore. Or you can go to my website at OurCuriousWorld.com, and I got some links that'll take you to Llewellyn's website, and you can order it off of there or off Amazon. It's all over the place.
Excellent.
Well, Jeff, again, I told you when you came on an hour ago, thank you for coming on at such short notice. We had a cancellation, and you were more than willing to come on here and chat with us tonight, so we really thank you a lot. We really appreciate
it. Well, it's been fun. I appreciate you having me on.
We'll have you come on again, and wow, you know, some of the ideas, I think it's going to have me and Bonnie boogering on this for a little while.
Probably.
For God to experience himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll be glad to come on anytime you want.
We'd love to have you come back on again. It'd be awesome, Jeff. Hang on the line for 1 second, okay?
I will.
Guys, this has been Ghostly Talk. I hope we did a good job.
I think we did a great job.
I think we did a great job.
Because, you know, Doug isn't here.
Right.
And he's a sparkling personality, whereas I'm kind of a jerk, you know. And
but we've grown to love you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. That's rationalization is a very good thing. Mm-hmm. I have to say it's wonderful. But, yeah, thanks, guys. I want to thank Pete Haviland for coming on and talking to us about what he's doing down there in Texas. I want to thank Robbie Thomas for coming on and making us almost cry.
Yes.
But it was very interesting to discuss that stuff,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
And I'd like to thank Jeff Allen Danilek for coming on and blowing our minds also.
Absolutely.
Been quite a night, I have to say. We will be back here doing the same thing here from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next Sunday. For more information, go to www.ghostlytalk.com. Thank you to everybody for listening to this thing we call Ghostly Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it isn't always what we want it to be. Sometimes it isn't always what you want it to be. Well, deal with that.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is. And we hope that you guys enjoy it.
Food for thought.
There you go. And Keith, hey, Keith, thanks for coming on.
Thank you,
no,
Keith.
Thank you for putting up with me.
Hey, you've been great. It's always a pleasure to have you here. You're a great friend of the show. You've always been a great friend of the show.
And a field reporter.
Yeah, he's a field reporter, and you've helped us with the production on this show. And it's always great to have you in studio here to hang out with us.
It's always great to be here.
Excellent. On that note, we're out of here. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm Keith.
And this was Ghostly Talk.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
about to listen to now.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
And more accurate, balanced news coverage. Real people with real lives in your dramas and on your talk shows. And if we don't get it, we'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media, become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Don't hate the media, become the media.